I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
So when we podded a few days ago over the weekend, we all kind of went away and just thinking it wouldn't be much happening in the coming days and weeks, but boy, were we wrong. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the only and official UK Seahawkers podcast. This week, a rush job to get through everything that's happened in the last 4 or 5 days. Myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Ross Bell, and we've got a full house with the very poorly stuffed up Adam Nathan. How are we, guys? Ross?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. It's been a quiet week, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've been very subdued. Nothing, no dramas. Adam?
I'm questionable, but I'm fighting fit. Fighting fit to be available for the big game.
Yeah, so obviously we'll get into what happened with terms of Seahawks staff moving into 2018. But half an hour or so ago before we started recording, the NFL UK and the NFL announced the 2018 slate of games in London. After a few years of having four, there is only three, but the big news came pretty much straight off the bat on October 14th, 2018. Yours, ours, and these Seattle Seahawks are heading over to these shores across the pond, making the trip in reverse that so many have made over the last few years, and playing at the new White Hart Lane against the AFC West, former AFC West division rival, Oakland Raiders. That's pretty cool, isn't it, Adam?
Very, very cool indeed. It's been a long time coming. For all the fans that have dreamed about seeing the team play, it's obviously an amazing bit of news. And it's just been really cool to have our guys in our city and not have to wait up until midnight, 1 o'clock for once to watch a big game. So that's probably the best thing about the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, we could all go to a Seahawks game and be on our own bed in the same day. It's quite cool. But also for you, Adam, as a Spurs fan, the first NFL game in that stadium, which is, if a franchise ever heads over there, which is going to be where the team's going to be based, that's an extra lining on the sunshine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice little incentive, and it's worth pointing out that the Spurs stadium is the first one that in the UK that's going to have a grass pitch for English football, and then that'll be retractable for a turf field underneath. So obviously in the NFL, the fans sit a little bit higher to the pitch than they do in soccer. So the stadium's sort of very much purpose-built for this reason.
Yeah, very, very cool. Ross, is all quite exciting.
It is, yeah. That's great forward planning by Spurs as well, by the way. That's really, really clever. I've been very anti UK games for a long time. I don't think the atmosphere is the same as what it would be in America and different to English sports. But yeah, it's really exciting that the Seahawks are coming over. Obviously, I'm going to try and go, and it's going to cost me a lot less than going to Seattle to watch a game. Well, maybe not London, yeah, London is expensive.
Yeah, well, it is, but it is a lot. What is the ideal? Obviously, ticket and information, all the stuff that the chapter is going to be trying to do will become known once communication is made with the Seahawks over the next few months. So keep an eye on all Facebook pages, Twitter at Seahawkers UK, and the website ukseahawkers.com for all of that. But also, we're going to see Marshawn Lynch, maybe, possibly. And then obviously with the news the Raiders have announced this week on Monday, with John Gruden being opposite sideline of Pete Carroll, it's a primetime matchup on a Sunday afternoon in London, Russ.
Yeah, definitely. This would have been one of the games of the week for whatever TV station shows in America. So yeah, they've pulled off quite a coup, I think. This is Raiders had a down season, so have we. So it could be to see which team's getting back to the level expected of them quicker, I suppose, next season.
Yeah, Adam, it's a big time game with all the characters and names involved.
Yeah, it's the perfect game. And I think I was saying to you guys earlier, or to Stuart earlier, our friendship and whatever was founded at the Raiders-Seahawks game a few years ago. So it's quite nice that it comes full circle back around and we get them to play here. That's just really cool.
Yeah, most definitely. So obviously, as I said, more information will come. Ticket appears to be the next week or so. Did FIUK say January 18th? Is that what they said? For tickets, obviously the pricing, and with all the questions on the Facebook page and Twitter as well, there will be plans put in place and tried avenues chased up to try and get as many tickets together, but obviously it does appear that is going to be a long shot. But yeah, moving on, all that drama and all that excitement on Thursday came after what was quite a hectic and swift action day on Wednesday from the Seattle Seahawks.
Davis, the single setback. Graham slots on the left side. Russell takes the shotgun snap. Four-man rush. Russell looks. Back of the end zone. It's caught by Jimmy Graham. Touchdown, Seahawks! In the front near corner of the end zone. As perfect a timing pass from Russell Wilson as you will see. And Jimmy Graham spins around and makes the catch. An 11-yard score. And the Seahawks take a 9-0 lead over the team with the best record in professional football.
On the right side, a tight end. Wentz from the shotgun. A slot to the far side. The handoff to Blount. No, it's a play fake. And Wentz keeps it. And he fights his way. He fumbles the ball in the end zone. It's out of the back of the end zone. Did Wentz cross the goal line with the ball in his possession, or did he fumble touchback. It? I think he fumbled it. It's a touchback, and the Seahawks are going to get it out to the 20-yard line. Here's
Shotgun with a trip set left side. Jimmy Graham standing up tight end right side. Davis in the backfield. Here comes the blitz. Russell steps back. Going to let it fly. Got a man open. Baldwin makes the catch. 10, 5, he's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Russell Wilson hits that back foot, and Doug Baldwin, he is money from 48 yards out, and the Seahawks go on top of the Eagles, 16-3.
At his own 42, Wilson again from the shotgun. Paul Richardson wide to the near side. Shotgun snap. Russell steps up in the pocket, breaks a tackle. Now he's going to run, pump fake. Now he laterals the ball. Coming up, five seal is Davis. Across the 40, down to the 35-yard line. Mike Davis on a heads-up play by Russell Wilson pitches the ball back.
So yeah, on Wednesday kicked off quite calmly after myself, Ross, and Matty made the point that just because it isn't happened yet, that it doesn't mean it's not going to happen, and we were proven right in some style as well. The Seahawks have moved on Wednesday to change four of their coaches, both coordinators on the offense and defensive side, and also the quarterback's coach, and also obviously could be more minor moves made as well. But we'll start with the offensive coordinator, the one which was first broke by Curtis Crabtree and Softy on KJR. For the first move, it was a bit disappointing for those few hours before the other moves came down. It was a bit worrying that it was just going to be the only one in the vacuum, but now there's been more joining it, it kind of all fits together and makes sense, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I guess the plan obviously has just been a complete offensive overhaul, which is, I guess, what the majority of fans were hoping to hear. Bevel's not necessarily the guy that I was particularly desperate for him to leave, you know, one way or the other. I think I'd have been happy either way with what happened with him. But I think probably he is a product of the fact that in the last four games, when the season was on the line, the offense was a complete and utter disaster. I don't think it was necessarily his fault. And people like Doug Baldwin went to great lengths to suggest that it was nothing to do with him. Yeah. But ultimately, sometimes the most obvious things are obvious for a reason. And that's where, you know, the sword was always going to fall, I think.
Yeah, Russ?
Yeah, Bevel definitely wasn't the biggest problem, but I don't think he's part of the solution either. So if you're going to make some changes, you may as well just change them all and start afresh. It's a very big season for Pete, I think. If he gets these sort of high, Pete and John, if they get these highs wrong, then change isn't always change for the better. It could be worse. You never know. Obviously, the O-line can be much worse, but it's interesting to see where they go from here and what kind of names we get linked with as well, because it's been quite quiet on links so far, but I suppose that's because it's early days.
Yeah, there was a worrying hour or so when Mike Sando from ESPN was tweeting out that Tom Cable was a favourite for the offensive coordinator job. That obviously still might happen, which would be very strange.
Imagine that.
Things. But yeah, with Devil Bevel, with 7 years in Seattle, a lot of people said he should have gone years ago, and that's just a load of old bonk, really. 2011, to 2017, the Seahawks offense on DVOA, which is weighted against opponents and efficiency and all sorts. The Seahawks were 22nd in 2011. In 2012, they were 4th. In 2013, they were 7th. In 2014, they were 5th. In 2015, they were 1st. 2016, 16th. And this year, they were 14th. So for all the issues, yes, and it wasn't great this year, but it was still an efficient, more efficient than most offenses in the team, with all the issues that we're going to get onto soon, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, it was efficient, and efficient was fine when the defense was playing completely lights out. Yeah. But ultimately, we actually, in the last season, were anything but efficient. We were higher on turnovers. We weren't able to move the chains that you would expect from a, you know, efficient, in inverted commas, team. And it really was a lot like just, you know, no practicing and just turning up on a Sunday and throwing a game plan together, unfortunately. Yeah. Whether or not that comes down to the coordinator or execution, I happen to suggest that it might be weighted more towards the latter. But ultimately, someone is always going to have to pay the price for it. And if you don't make the playoffs, it's sort of the easiest way to highlight issues that you have in the franchise.
Yeah, I'd agree. But my main point was that it's just all the stuff about saying it's been the case for years. It's just not true. Darrell Bevell had this offense moving and purring at a rate that the Seahawks hadn't quite done. It also went to back-to-back Super Bowls and could have gone to three straight NFC Championship games if Matt Bryant wasn't a good kicker for the Falcons in 2012 as well. So, but yeah, that is a load of old tosh, really, though, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, just look at the second half of that 2015 season. If you're a bad offensive coordinator, you do not have the leading touchdown receiver in the league, and you don't have a quarterback going mental throwing 350 yards a game. They're perfectly in sync that second half of that season. And there's been a lot of the arguments against Bevell is that he doesn't know how to use Jimmy Graham, and they figured it out eventually. But it's an offense that's always worked when all the parts are purring. If part of it isn't working properly, then the whole thing kind of does fall apart. So the O-line's included in that. So Cable takes as much responsibility for Bevell getting fired as anything else, I think.
Yeah, and also the talk of Jimmy Graham not being used effectively enough, and then being linked with a player who didn't utilise the best wide receiver in the world this year is quite ironic. Moving on, yeah, the next one is on the other side of the ball. Defensive coordinator Chris Richard has not been officially fired, but he has been told that the door is open and they won't stand in his way if any other opportunities are presented to him. Chris Richard has this week, I think, or maybe over the weekend, interviewed with the Indianapolis Colts over their head coaching vacancy. This is possibly the most surprising one of the lot, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a weird story because there's been a lot of smoke and yet zero fire, and we're not really getting anything official. And you would have thought that with yesterday being, you know, the day of the long knives, that there would have been some news about that as well. So I'm a little bit confused as to why there hasn't been anything official on there, whether they're saying, you know, with Chris Richard, we'll keep you unless you can get a better job. I don't really understand what's going on there. So I think we need a bit more information. I guess today you'll probably hear whether or not that's going to happen.
Yeah. Russ?
Yeah, are we actively looking for a new defensive coordinator, or is it, like Adam said, we'll just keep Chris Richard if no one else wants him? I'm quite happy to keep him. I was quite shocked that they were willing to let him go. I think it's not the defensive problems this year aren't down to his play calling. I think it's injuries that have shattered our season, and we've long had a problem of going into prevent mode in the fourth quarter. That was a problem for Dan Quinn and for Gus Bradley before him. It's not just a Chris Richard issue. So interesting to see what happens in the next couple of days with Richard, definitely.
Yeah, it's to pin the blame on the 2017 Seahawks defense and Chris Richard is quite harsh. I think I would not be surprised if he sticks around, but I think at this point it's pretty unlikely and untenable that he does. And then the third or the fourth, Carl Smith, the quarterback's coach, was also released, who's been with Russell Wilson the whole time. He's been in Seattle since 2012. And then the other guy, the one that we all waited for and are worried that it wasn't going to come, offensive line coach, assistant head coach, run game coordinator, which means absolutely nothing when you have a run game which has a quarterback lead the way. Tom Cable was relieved of his duties the last hammer to fall on Wednesday, and it's about 3 years too late, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, you said it perfectly in a tweet you tweeted yesterday. If you only ever hear the new offensive line coach's name when he's hired and never again, that's perfect. That's what I want. I don't need to know who's coaching these guys. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, we're definitely going to hear about them, because if they're really good, then he'll be compared to Tom Cable, though. But yeah, it was long overdue and needed, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone was going to lose their job, you would suggest that it would have to be Tom Cable, given the state of the offensive line in the last few years. It's probably the one that, if you were going to celebrate a departure, this would be the one to celebrate. But again, like we need to see who they're going to bring in. I'm fully in favor of this move. But right now we're sort of stuck in that purgatorial position where we have no coaches currently. And I'm slightly concerned that, you know, we just have no coaches. So let's see who they're bringing in. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether Pete Carroll wants to bring in, he hasn't really got a great history of wanting to work with experienced guys sort of with their own voice. So it's going to be interesting to see who they bring in and see if there's a change of tact. One thing I think that you retweeted, that what this does suggest is that Pete Carroll is going to be here for a little while to come, because they wouldn't be making these moves underneath him if there wasn't a real plan for him to be there for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. It's also me give him a bit of flack, and Adam, you compared him to Arsene Wenger, but all credit does have to go to Pete Carroll for being able to see that it all needed a fresh set of eyes, fresh voices and stuff, though, isn't it? Or is that just a too easy connection to make, Adam?
I think in any industry, sometimes the same voice gets tiring to listen to when it's the same message over a prolonged period of time. So, yeah, just for freshening it up, you would have to hope that's going to make some sort of difference. With a bit of luck, this can sort of propel us to the next level, because, it has been, it's been lacking in the last few years, and it's been getting, you know, progressively worse, and that's the issue. That really, if you were going to say that's been a problem, that's it. That it's been getting worse as opposed to better, fairly progressively.
Well, I think I'd agree, Russ.
Yeah, especially with the O line, it's got worse the more resources we've poured into it, and that's going the wrong way. It should get better the more you put into it. Did we all see that tweet from Tyler Palumbus saying mind blown that the Seahawks would fire Tom Cable, easily one of the best defensive line coaches in the league, and has done it having to convert late round D linemen to O linemen on a yearly basis? If that's the narrative that's out there, that's completely wrong.
Well, the backups are all late round, let's be honest. They're all undrafted guys, so he is right with that. But I think Michael Robinson tweets some, Justin Forsett, I think, tweeted, obviously, Afedi Ibushi also tweet, but the only one you need to pay attention to about tweet about Cable is Justin Britt. He's the only one he could hang his hat on. He's turned him, well, yes, it took him 3 years, but he turned Justin Britt into a Pro Bowler, which seemed unlikely after 1 and 2 years. So I think he's the only one who really has any weight behind defending and being disappointed that his coach and his O-line coach for his whole NFL career is no longer in that locker room, in that building, next time he walks in. Any preference, any names you've seen linked, Adam, who you'd like to see get a chance, or is it just going to, as you say, just wait and see and just hope it works?
I'm going to wait and see, because it doesn't really sound like there's like a Shanahan out there, you know, that could be, the next big thing. But I guess what will be interesting is to see which coach or which side gets the sort of assistant head coaching position, because, you know, Tom Cable was that, wasn't he? So I guess to see which coach comes in as his assistant head coach in addition to the coordinator or line coach or whatever, that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, the departure of Cable did add weight to the Steve Sarkisian links, which Dan Quinn thankfully kiboshed quite quickly yesterday. But the experience and the level, he's not going to move from OC to OC, even if it is back close to his family, back home for Sarkisian. But he would if there was added position titles to it, which no Cable could see them approach. But please don't do that, because, he's wasted Julio Jones for 17 weeks, and amongst other things for Sarkisian. Yeah, anyone for you standing out, or is it the same as Adam, Russ?
There's a couple of names I do like, that John DiFilippo. the Eagles quarterback coach. He's turned Wentz into a MVP player this season. Think what he could do with Wilson, even if it is just for 1 year before he gets a head coach's job. But I also like the idea of Rob Chudzinski, because there's weapons on this offense. McKissick, CJ Prosser, if he ever plays football again. People like that that can really benefit from an exciting offensive play calling. Mix it up a bit.
Wasn't Chudzinski in Indianapolis this year?
Yes, he has been, yeah.
Okay. that offense was an absolute tire fire. The O-line was even worse than ours at times. The running game. But yeah, with all the changes made, we did ask for some of your reactions and questions. Made just a few reactions here. Gaz Alcock said, I think most would agree after the past couple of seasons, a fresh approach was acquired. I think we only need a few improvements on the playing field. We'll be back where we were as an attacking force 3-4 years ago. Need to get that running game back on track. Hopefully Carson could be the man to stay injury-free. I mean, stay injury-free is going to be something attached to quite a lot of these players, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Chris Carson is that he was looking really good, but he wasn't looking as good as Rawls was in 2015 before his injury. And if you look at how that's gone since he came back, like, I'm not trying to put Carson down here, but yeah, I think to look at Carson, you know, the great hope for next season, you know, is potentially a little bit optimistic and slightly over the top, perhaps. I think generally scheme is going to be much more important than personnel. We discussed with Nathan Ernst a couple of weeks ago about running backs and drafting running backs high and running games and whatever. And if you look at some of the teams, for example, Dallas and Jacksonville, I think the running backs that aren't Zeke Elliott have had just as many yards per carry as Elliott and Fournette have. So obviously it makes a bit of a difference when, you know, you have a lesser running back in that teams respect the run a bit less. But I think it's going to be much more about how the scheme works as opposed to individual guys coming back to make the run game work.
Yeah, I agree. Also, Nathan, this weekend, enjoying the hell out of Leonard Fournette having a 2.7 yard per carry in that awful playoff game as well. Andy Robinson asks, if you suppose that Blair Walsh makes a couple of field goals and we make it to the playoffs before losing last week, do you still make these changes? Obviously, it's all hindsight, it's 2020, but if this team's in the midst of a playoff run, the changes aren't made, obviously, this week, but they can hide behind another playoff appearance to not make them whenever the season ended, couldn't they, Russ?
Yeah, there's no chance any of these guys have been fired if we're still in the playoffs at this point, because your options become even more limited the longer you wait. So, and like you say, it would be hidden by the fact that, well, we're in the playoffs again, so we can't be doing anything that badly. Yeah, it's a really good question, that one.
It is just all hindsight, though, isn't it, with things like that? But it does carry weight, Adam.
The most important thing to realise there is that Blair Walsh could not make a couple of field goals, and it's not a case of if he could, because he is fucking shite and has cost us the season. But I guess, you know, we did have the grandstanders on the group a couple of days ago, you know, praising their incredible foresight for predicting the coaching changes. If anything does, you know, missing the playoffs, having made the playoffs for the last 6 years, is probably quite a good way to illuminate and highlight issues that the team has. So maybe they wouldn't have changed it, but I would like to think that the team aren't short-sighted enough to just look at the win and loss column as what does and doesn't constitute a good season.
Yeah, I'd agree. Martin Flynn once has said he's interested to see if this means either a signals a departure from Pete's ground and pound philosophy to a more passing-based offense, or if it will signify a reinforcement of Pete's running game philosophy. And that's something that will only be answered when the coaches and staff is in place and we kind of can go over their CV and pass with a fine-tooth comb, Adam.
There's no way that Pete Carroll is going to go away from his philosophy. No. There's just no way.
Not completely.
No, I mean, he might be willing to put a bit more of the offense into a younger guy's hands and, you know, maybe do a little bit more. But like, if the Seahawks play the style well, then it's probably good enough to work, because, you know, it does feature a lot of play action and whatever, but it's all going to revolve around, can they get the running game going? And that's going to mean the offensive line is going. So I think in general, like, I think Carroll, the way he wants to play, you can win with it. And I think he's going to want to go with that more than anything else. I don't think he's never going to be a coach that's going to want to throw the ball 50 times a game. I just can't see that being possible.
No, but I think a lot of design, I think the design of players may change. I don't think they'll be as archaic as some of it was this year. Russ?
Yeah, I think it all leads back to the departure of Cable, assistant head coach and offensive line coach and run game coordinator. All that stuff kind of plays into each other, that he would have been in Pete's ear saying, we need to run, when it clearly wasn't working. So I think we will still stick with the zone running scheme because it has worked in the past. We just need better coaching on that line. I think that line is good enough. It just needs better coaching, I think.
Yeah. All of that will be done when, I mean, 24 hours, 30 hours removed from it, from some of the moves, and we still haven't seen any firm names. Obviously, the London stuff has probably taken precedence for the PR team this morning in Seattle. But yeah, there was one more, but I've managed to get off the comments, so I can't find it anymore. But yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, then the free agency rolls round, and then decisions made will obviously mould the rest of the off season. Anything else that has happened this week in Seahawks land you wanted to focus on, guys?
Baldwin appears to have said again that it wasn't about the coaching, it was about the execution. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Tony Kornheiser, pardon the interruption, I mean, Kornheiser's a bit of a blowhard, but he suggested that Doug Baldwin has, because of his relationship with Richard Sherman, has next to no time for his quarterback, because Sherman doesn't. I mean, it's quite weak and quite tenuous, but if he's coming out making comments about execution, it does kind of all point back to number three, doesn't it?
Yeah. The way that Wilson is sort of, you know, respected and treated will always be like a thing that hangs over the team, because no one really knows. But ultimately, I think what Wilson has shown is that when he's playing well, he is certainly a leader and has the full respect of the team. And so I guess, you know, the cycle goes that get Wilson playing well and again, and then everything will be fine in that locker room again.
We did manage. I do think they might have a hand in what happened on Wednesday with all the coaching changes as well. John Schneider is staying as the Seahawks general manager. The Green Bay Packers hired someone who appeared to be their fifth choice, but never mind, they're going forward with him. And John Schneider is going to be the Seahawks general manager for the foreseeable future, with that job possibly being the only one which they will have the, well, they don't seem to fire and hire coaches and general managers very often in Green Bay. But yeah, a bit more information is coming about the NFL game. If you want to register for tickets, you can on ticketmaster.com/NFL and obviously select the Seahawks game. All of that is very exciting. It's been quite a busy week. We will try and pod, as we said last time, more often during this offseason and not get called out by people in Montana like we did last year, Brandon and Adam. But yeah, and if you want to get involved, you can, ukseahawkers.com, at SeahawkersUK on Twitter, at Stu_Court, at Adam D. Nathan, at Rossbauer 1984. It's going to be a fun off-season with fun few months leading up to the game on October 14th at the new White Hart Lane. I'm sure it'll have a garage sponsor attached to it. Adam, or is that going to be the name forever?
It's going to be sponsored at some point, but I don't know when that's going to come in. It would be glorious to call it White Hart Lane again, but there's just no way they're going to pass up on the cheese that comes with selling the naming rights.
No, that's definitely. Yeah, but until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.